Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to explore what the latest peer-reviewed science from the National Library of Medicine shares about nutrients. For example, from Boston University School of Medicine comes a study about vitamin D supplementation, really important because it found it improved more than 150% survival of cancers of the digestive tract, including colorectal cancer in patients with a cancer-fighting immune system. Now, according to the study, for more than 100 years, it has been believed that sunlight and vitamin D deficiency were associated with the risk of many deadly cancers, including colorectal, prostate, and breast cancer. However, in a new commentary in the Journal of the American Medical Association Network Open, an MD, PhD, professor of medicine, pharmacology, physiology, and biophysics, heavy-duty credentials, also in molecular medicine at the University School of Medicine, explores the controversy as to whether improving vitamin D status, meaning just getting more sunlight or taking supplements so you're not deficient, you have plenty in your body, has any benefit for reducing the risk of developing cancer, as well as improving relapse-free and mortality outcomes. He believes the results of the what is called the KANNO, K-A-N-N-O, support in this system, the significant body of associated evidence in clinical studies concluding that improvement in vitamin D status through vitamin D supplementation can be an effective strategy for improving survival outcome of cancers, especially the digestive tract, including colorectal cancer. And it's all about what vitamin D3 does to the P53 gene. And the P53 gene produces the P53 protein to prevent cells from becoming malignant. Cancer clearly mutates this gene, and the mutated P53 protein helps the cancer to grow and become immune to cancer therapy. Well, the professor found that patients whose immune system is on high alert and produces antibodies to control the production and release of this mutated P53 protein were more likely, with more than a 2.5-fold, to improve their chances of surviving the cancer if they also took 2,000 international units of vitamin D3 compared to patients who had the antibodies but did not take vitamin D supplementation. Those patients who did not produce the antibodies received no survival benefit. So, very important, what have I been sharing with you for decades, over half a century? Get sunlight, get out and exercise, de-stress, eat a wholesome, clean diet, and get a test taken. Today we have really good tests, inexpensive, and they just take a small sample of blood. And what I suggest for anyone over the age of 30, get your hormone test taken. It measures all of your hormone from your thyroid hormone to DHEA, the mother hormone that creates a lot of others, and it tells you whether or not you're in or out of balance. Secondly, get your nutrient profile. Make sure you're not deficient in vitamin C. A lot of people are. Vitamin D3, magnesium, zinc, very important, and vitamin E. Then just look at your diet and ask, is this diet a pro-cancer diet with all the inflammatory agents, or is it an anti-cancer diet? And the anti-cancer diet is what you want to be on, all right? And then make sure you get a good amount of vitamin D3, and make sure you take your omega-3 fatty acids. So vitamin D is not only good at preventing, but improving cancer outcomes, and that's important because of how it manifests on this protein. A new study suggests that if women adopt a diet that has soy in it, not every day, particularly before going through menopause, it could benefit their heart. In this latest study published in the journal Menopause, researchers at the Wake Forest School of Medicine, which is in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, wanted to see whether a soy-rich diet, like tempeh, tofu, miso, could protect against atherosclerosis, a risk factor for heart disease, whereby the arteries become blocked by fatty substances, plaque, restricting your blood flow. Remember, anything that restricts your blood flow puts greater pressure upon the heart. It has to beat harder, and your pulse rate goes up. Those are really not good things to happen. And then if any plaque breaks off, then that can cause a blockage, and you either have a stroke or heart attack. So, in premenopausal, in this case monkeys, who ate a diet either high in animal protein or a diet rich in protein from high isoflavone soybeans, and the team then looked at what happened in the monkeys' bodies, and they found that a soy-rich diet protected them. So that's good. Have healthier cholesterol levels. And here are the things you want to check for in a blood chemistry also. Inflammatory markers, because you can't feel these. There's no symptoms of them. But if you start getting homocysteine levels up, let's say around 10 or higher, you're at a big risk of a heart attack. Sudden, boom, it's over. All right? And fibrinogen, C-reactive protein, and triglycerides. Make sure those four, again, C-reactive protein, homocysteine, fibrinogen, and triglycerides. If they're elevated, you can get them down. The B-complex, especially with folic acid and B12, B6, vitamin C, and trimethylglycine can bring them down. And there's supplements that you can take specifically to bring down elevated homocysteine and C-reactive protein. But there's nothing that works as well as de-stressing. Let me just emphasize, stress is a major killer, all right? I won't go now. I'm going to do it in my classroom on the air. But when you start getting stressed, the electrical charges to your brain, to your heart, to your immune system go off the end of the charts. And therefore, you can end up having irregular heartbeat just with one argument, one screaming match. That's all it takes. So let's be calmer. From the University Leuven in Belgium, endurance exercises can play a role in regulating telomere transcription. Sounds a little technical, right? Okay, I'll simplify it. We all have chromosomes. The health of those chromosomes determine how long a given organ or cell will live. When they're tightly bound at the end, they're tightly bound by what is called a telomere. So the telomere is like the plastic cap on a shoelace. It prevents it from fraying. So then you can't get it through the hole. Okay, the same thing is happening at your cells. When you exercise, and especially with some endurance exercises, you do difficult biking, not easy biking. And I see a lot of people in these spinning classes, they've got on the least resistance. That's a junk exercise, that's worthless. Put it always on the hardest resistance, so you really gotta pump. Power walking the same. Don't just walk so you can have a conversation with someone. No, you should be walking fast enough you cannot have a conversation with someone. Again, you build up to it, you take your pulse before, see what your resting pulse is, that you're not in a danger zone. You communicate with your cardiologist, is it okay if I exercise and to what degree? And if you've been healthy throughout your life, they'll generally say, absolutely, you need this. But for those in the anti-aging field, it's one of the best things to keep your telomeres tightly bound to your chromosome end caps. And that means the longer the telomeres, the longer your life. I'm going to be doing a new study in about 9 months from now. In that study, I'm going to have 3 months on campus with a select group of people. They will go through a whole series of medical tests. And one of the new things we're going to do that we haven't up to this point is there's new research, there's new technology that can accurately measure telomere length and the significance to your DNA. Plus, we have the DNA methylation test, so we're going to test both of those, plus all the other things before and after 1 year. And people will be on campus 3 months and they'll go home. And all this is happening because of the success we've had in these studies, five studies. We're in the sixth study right now. And I'll let you know the results. about another 4 weeks when it's over and the scientists and the university have gotten the results and they give it back to me. But I'll tell you, exercise, stress management, healthy diet, juicing, proper supplementation, intermittent fasting, those are the keys to a longer and healthier life. And that's what virtually all the institutions are finding. This particular article was published in Science Advances, and the team described their findings and makes a big difference. Eating healthy and getting regular exercise can lead indirectly to a healthier and longer life. That's what they're saying in this study. And finally, from University of Sheffield School of Biosciences, grow your own household's production of food, fruits and vegetables, and it's going to make you healthier, and it's really good. What they're saying is this. Household fruits and vegetables, meaning those that you grow yourself and eat, and having a healthy garden is good for the mind, and it's good for you, because when you're growing something, you can go out and pick, and you can pick some blueberries, you can pick a lemon, you can grow lemons, oranges, tangerines. I do it all the time. In fact, you don't even need a big tree. You can get small trees, and they'll give you a good amount of fruits and vegetables. And when it's cold out, you can put them into a greenhouse. But just to be able to go out and pick your lettuces, you know, there are over 100 different types of lettuce, it's really good because it's fresh, it's healthy, it's organic. You grew it, now enjoy it. And that helps improve overall well-being. All right, just, I don't think they needed a study to prove this, but they did it, so fine. I know a lot of you think, well, I live in the city, I live in an apartment, I don't have room. Even on your kitchen counter, you can, now they're little units. They're, you know, they're maybe 36 inches high, and they fit on a counter, and you can grow microgreens and sprouts in them. You can grow vegetables, you can grow, certainly you can grow all kinds of lettuce. And then wouldn't you rather eat something you've grown? You're watching it every day, it doesn't take a long time. So that's important. And finally, I'll do one extra because this is important. This is from Yale School of Medicine. And what they're saying is this new study published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. So mind you, it's Yale School of Medicine, Annals of Internal Medicine, indicates that overdiagnosing and over-treating breast cancer in older women is far more widespread than commonly believed, given that women undergoing annual and biannual screenings are not being properly informed of the risks, and in some cases, only being told purported benefits. It's pertinent that this information be shared. And this was funded by the National Cancer Institute, and therefore a high gravitas study. The retrospective looked at 54,000 women, 70 years and older, compared the cumulative incidence of breast cancer in those who had recently screened with those who did not. The study looked at both breast cancer diagnosis and breast cancer-related death for up to 15 years of follow-up. What makes this study exceptional is that the researchers included breast cancer deaths as an endpoint and not just diagnosis, which makes it possible to determine whether mammography is actually having a net benefit on extending the lives of those who consent to undergo them. Sadly, the overdiagnosis of breast cancer is exceedingly common. Breast cancer overdiagnosis is defined as screen-detected breast cancer that could not have caused symptoms or signs in the remaining lifetime. In many cases, those diagnoses of breast cancer actually have benign abnormalities, such as ductal carcinoma in situ. Also, it's just a stage zero breast cancer, which in the vast majority of cases will not cause death or even, you know, hospitalization if left undiagnosed and untreated. So that's important. Just do your homework, all right? Don't just accept everything that you're told to do without some pushback. That's the latest on health and healing. And we're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. We have a lot to share, and there's going to be room for you to call in and give us your input near the end of the program. I'm going to continue today with part three, shorter part, but this actually is a part of the long study or article that looks at all the studies in the entire world literature showing an association between autism and vaccines. Wikipedia says there are none. Therefore, there's no association between autism and vaccines. The CDC, the FDA, US Public Health Service, the mainstream media agree, but they're all wrong. Don't put a person's own emotions into it or what you believe or feel. What does this study show when you examine it? I'll give you an example. This is from Big Pharma. They admit it. One damning case of government and industry knowledge about a vaccine autism connection is a leaked December 16th, 2011 document from GlaxoSmithKline, one of the world's largest vaccine manufacturers. The text admits the corporation has been aware of the autism risk associated with its Infanrix vaccine, which combines diphtheria, tetanus, acellular pertussis, hepatitis B, inactivated polio, and hemophilus influenza viruses all together in one. The report details adverse effects associated with autism, including encephalitis, developmental delays, altered states of consciousness, speech delays, and other adverse reactions. So it's there. You can deny it, but it's there. And while these revelations might be considered criminal cover-ups that directly threaten public health, which they do, they've had little effect on changing national policy over vaccine safety. Rather, the official denial of any possible association between vaccines and autism has hardened into an absolute dogma. And to date, there is not a single gold standard publication to refute with any certainty vaccine-autism connections. Indeed, research from around the world proving a relationship increases, but almost none of it is coming from within American medical institutions. Unlike the United States, the European Union, the United Kingdom, and Australia, the majority of the government's health ministries in the modern industrialized world do not take an official national stance on the vaccine autism controversy and other serious vaccine-related injuries. Only 19 countries, including the United States, have no-fault policies regarding pharmaceutical industry for vaccine injury compensation program, meaning that if every single vaccine and every single dosage that any vaccine maker gave the public, which caused adverse effects and death, they would not be held accountable for any of it. Now think of that. On the one hand, let's use Occam's razor's philosophy. If vaccine makers were so sure of the safety and efficacy of their vaccines, and if the FDA and its panels were so assured of its safety and efficacy, why then go out of its way to indemnify the manufacturers and governmental agencies? So you see, they're not being honest, but the media is not challenging them. Now, this is partly due to the American and British health agencies being heavily compromised by private vaccine business interest. The revolving doors and conflicts of interest between these federal agencies and the pharmaceutical industry have been well documented. In the United States, members of the CDC Vaccine Advisory Committee are deeply in the pockets of pharmaceutical firms. And yet nothing happens. Nothing changes. The vaccine market is one of the most toxic cash cow scams in operation. In 2016, MarketWatch reported that the technological advisory firm Technoveo released its Global Human Vaccines Market 2016-2020 analysis, estimating that the vaccine market would reach $61 billion by 2020. At the start of 2016, it was worth $24 billion. The enormous projection increase is due to global initiatives to push vaccination compliance upon other nations in over 270 new vaccines. And ask yourself this. This is just common sense. It takes years of research and development, animal trials, human stage trials, 1, 2, and 3, you're looking at about 7 to 10 years, minimally, before a vaccine can be determined safe and effective, but only if, when they're using a controlled vaccine against the placebo is saline solution, salt water. But they don't do that. To the contrary, they will take one of the most toxic vaccines known to have adverse effects and use that as their placebo, knowing they're going to get high rates of reaction from the placebo, which means that whatever reactions their vaccine has, oh, compared to a placebo, their product is better. But they don't tell anyone. They don't tell doctors, scientists, public health officials, or the public. We cheated. We didn't use a placebo. It's not a real double-blind study. So that's the game they play. Now, you think with all the people winning, you know, Pulitzer Prizes from the New York Times editorial staff, someone would have caught on. This is a big story. Big story. Because it's one thing for them to say, okay, you can choose from freedom of choice to have a vaccine or not. Fair enough. Then the assumption is you're going to do your homework. Okay, that's not going to happen. People don't do their homework on things like this. But okay, fair enough. But that's not what they're doing. They're mandating it. They're lobbying in every state to make sure that every child in every state, every college student, gets as many vaccines as they can pump into the body. Already mentioned that they have 270 new vaccines. Do you think they're producing those without a forward knowledge that they're going to be able to get this politically accepted so they can get it scientifically accepted? Because the body politic controls the scientific politic, and it's all politic. It's like Idiocracy. Get enough highly credentialed people who have no ethics to agree in a consensus that, yes, your child should have 270 vaccines. And suddenly, that's good science. No. No, it's not. But that's the way we're played. The report also predicted that American pharmaceutical companies, notably Merck, Pfizer, and Abbott, had the most to gain. The industry also benefits from the $10 billion pledged by Bill and Melinda Gates to increase vaccination rates and compliance worldwide. So when was the last time you saw Bill Gates on any national television medium being challenged by how much money did you say you made? Was it something the equivalent of you invested $20 billion and you made $200 billion in return, 10 times your investment, and yet you're a nonprofit? How exactly does that work? And then after the vaccine didn't work, as promised, you unloaded that stock and made a huge profit. And no one holds you accountable? No. That's how fettered the entire field is. The vaccine market is one of the most toxic cash cow scams in operation. And it continues to be that and will continue to be that. So we have to understand scientific integrity exists with independent scientists. It does not exist in corporate or universities that are relying upon those huge grants. So understand something, the vaccine makers, they were smart. They said, we're going to give you vaccines. We're going to have supporting people from our side on the vaccine advisory committees. They're going to rubber stamp our recommendation. You at the FDA, we own you. So you'll do what we say. Yes, sir. Whatever you say. And then the public dutifully says, but the FDA approved. The FDA is a criminal organization. Have you not figured that out yet? Why is it criminal, Gary? Well, why don't you do some homework? Is that the first homework you've ever done in your life? What's homework? Yeah. And that's how far down the rabbit hole the average American is sunk in being irresponsible because they don't want to know the truth about anything. Because what if their diet was crap and their diseases of themselves and their children were directly related to the bad choices they were making? How would they deal with that? So they don't deal with it. What do you mean, Gary? Smoking is bad for you? Drinking a gallon of wine and then going 100 miles an hour is dangerous? Since when? What? Who said? The amount of conscious denial of a person's reality is amazing. example, in 2012, after a long investigative trial, an Italian court ruled that the MMR vaccine caused brain injury leading to autism in the case of Valentino Bocca. This ruling was intentionally blacked out by the American media. Ah, so we don't want to know the truth about autism and vaccines. That's correct. Because think of all of you people in the media who've promoted vaccines without doing your homework. Japan discontinued the MMR vaccine in 1993, 4 years after imposing it on its citizens on a mandatory basis. The rate of adverse events, including meningitis, limb loss, and death, was 2,000 times, let me repeat this, 2,000 times higher than expected. And the shot was pulled after doctors confirmed it had injured at least one child's nervous system and probably at least three. Japan, not coincidentally, has one of the lowest infant mortality rates in the world. Meanwhile, in the United States, California has now mandated child vaccination, and several other states have proposed similar compulsory vaccination laws, while their constituents are bombarded with news stories playing up every measles case as the new bubonic plague. The Idaho Department of Health Public Information Officer Tom Shanahan expressed his regret that his state was unlikely to pass such a measure, complaining to Reuters that Idaho, quote, there's a pretty strong culture of individual rights. Okay, Tom, is that a bad thing? Do we not want individual rights? We only want corporate rights, government rights. That's called fascism, Mussolini rights. Yeah, I see. And one other piece today on research. If good quality science exists, they could discredit the pro-vaccine argument that there is no connection to autism. It is completely understandable that the media and the government and industry and scientists for hire continued their unrelenting attack on independent scientists, physicians, and most importantly upon the victims themselves. To acknowledge that the entire vaccine program is unsupported by gold standard science would mean massive lawsuits, congressional investigations, and discrediting the CDC, the FDA, the U.S. Public Health Services, and the pharmaceutical companies. In effect, this could be the largest public health scandal in American history, and the public would be very unforgiving. Let's take a look at more damning evidence linking vaccines with autism and neurodevelopmental disease and the systemic suppression of this evidence. The vaccine autism debate has been limited mainly to two issues. The MMR vaccine, following the controversies over Dr. Andrew Wakefield's findings in the 1990s, and the toxicological science on thimerosal. Studies have pointed to the role of other vaccines than MMR in autism as well. Doctors at Stony Brook University's Medical Center determined that male infants vaccinated with the hepatitis B vaccine prior to 1999 had a 300% higher autism rate than their non-vaccinated peers. The risk was greater among non-white boys. Concerns over thimerosal are waning because it has been removed from all vaccines except for the influenza shot, and even the flu vaccine cannot account for the rising autism rate. And since 2001, autism has steadily continued to rise. In 2000, it was 1 in 250 children. Okay. As of March 2023, the CDC's reported rate has dropped to a shocking 1 in 36. Just a few years prior, in 2018, the rate was 1 in 44. This rate has been found to be even higher by the authors of a JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association pediatric research letter published in 2020. They found autism was occurring in 3.49% of children and adolescents 3 to 17. That's 1 in 30. The CDC argues that this proves thimerosal is not the culprit. It ignores a 2012 Australian study published in the journal Toxicological and Environmental Chemistry that there is a direct maternal transfer of ethylmercury from the pregnant mothers to the embryo fetus. It remains America's federal health policy for pregnant women to receive the flu shot, which can contain 25 micrograms of mercury. More on that on tomorrow's program. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to play a clip now. This clip is important because I want you to see what a former resident of San Francisco, who is highly educated, was the second most influential person in Levi Strauss. Her name is Jennifer Tsai, S-E-Y, just living a normal life. Her kids went to public school, not the private schools. But then what happened after COVID? And this is just one of the reasons that we've seen the complete collapse of San Francisco. And it's going to get worse. Hard to imagine, but it will. Let's listen to some of what she has to say.
San Francisco is always called the can-do city, the city that knows how. When I would travel as mayor to different parts of the world, you would be treated like you were the president of a country.
You were the mayor at the good times. Did you ever think it would become like this?
$14 billion, $800 million budget for a city that's only 49 square miles in size. This is unheard of. When you look at our homeless issue, we've spent in the last 7 years $2,800,000,000. But when you break that down, nobody seems to know, is it 7,000 homeless or is it 17,000 homeless? The Hoover Institute came up with a study and showing that it looks like we're spending about $70,000 per homeless person in San Francisco per year.
Wow.
It's outrageous. How did that happen?
My guest today is Frank Jordan. He used to be the mayor of San Francisco. Today he's going to discuss why the city is facing the challenges it is facing now, and what's going to take to turn things around.
It is out of control with the free drugs and all the fentanyl that's killing people. It's the city of St. Francis, and we thrive on the fact that we welcome all diversity, all nationalities and lifestyles, but we've lost something in overdoing it to the point that everybody sees you're doing so much, why shouldn't I go there?
We've had guests from San Francisco. They dress better than anybody else in California, and they're more eloquent in talking. Are they getting worried about the situation?
So I think that reality check is coming now.
I'm Siamak Korami. Welcome to California Insider. Frank, it's great to have you on. Welcome.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're very excited to have you on. You're a former mayor of San Francisco, and what's going on with San Francisco? Can you tell us what's happening?
Well, I look back, I'm 88 now. I'm an elderly citizen, I guess, of San Francisco. I've been through a lot of the wars over the years. I've seen the ups and downs, the good years, the bad years. But right now, we're not having a good time. I looked at San Francisco as a native son, everybody's favorite city, it was always called, and the can-do city, the city that knows how. Now, all of a sudden, I'm looking at books that are coming out called The Left Coast City and San Francisco. And it hurts. You can feel the changing because internationally, we were everybody's favorite city. And when I would travel as mayor of San Francisco to different parts of the world, you would be treated like you were the president of a country because San Francisco was a magic name. And the Golden Gate Bridge and the cable cars and the beautiful weather and the diversity of its people had everything going for it. Now we see that when you're looking at recent polls are saying is that 70% of the people of San Francisco are saying the city is now going in the wrong direction. And 66% are saying that the mayor, they're dissatisfied with the mayor's approach and leadership. And some of the reasons why we can get into. One is that we now have a $14,800,000,000 budget for a city that's only 49 square miles in size.
It's a huge budget, right?
A huge budget, and but that means we have 34,000 city employees, and if you add the temporaries and the ones that are just there as a
contractor,
contracting out, that you're up to 39,000 employees. That to me is outrageous. City Hall has become a hiring hall in some way. It makes no sense because the money seems to be coming in, but it's going out just as fast as it's going. Because we had great technology, we had hospitality industry, the banking industry, the insurance industry. We had great talent all around us in the business community. We're doing very well, including philanthropy. But now they're seeing what's happening with The taxes are going up. Gross sales tax is going to large businesses of 0.5%. That would be an extra $300 million going into the coffers of city government just to look at the homeless issues. Well, now that's another problem, because when you look at our homeless issue, we've spent in the last 7 years $2.8 billion. Now that's in 7 years. Wow. And we're averaging now $700 million a year just on homeless. But when you break that down, nobody seems to know, is it 7,000 homeless or is it 17,000 homeless? But the Hoover Institute came up with a study and showing that it looks like we're spending about $70,000 per homeless person in San Francisco per year.
Wow.
It's outrageous. It's how did that happen? We have 59 different.
Okay, I just wanted to give you just a little insight from a former mayor when the city was at its best. And I can speak for myself. I've been to San Francisco probably 30 times, and it was one of my one of the cities I enjoy going to for the culture, for the people, for the just the ambiance, magnificent. In any case, listen to a few of the figures. San Francisco has a larger budget for such a small population, a small area, compared to New York City. Now, New York City's budget is obscene. There's so much corruption in it. But set that aside. Now they're saying, okay, we have to spend almost $80,000 a year for a homeless person in San Francisco. What exactly are you doing for that money, for that person? Of course, nothing. Oh, we give them free clean needles, and we give them drugs, and that's about it. Because they're still out in the street, and it's growing and growing and growing. In fact, a person that tried to prevent people from shoplifting was told that if he touches a person, he'll be arrested, not the shoplifters. Now, that's pervasive. Now, all your big stores are gone. You can drive 5 blocks in the main center of downtown on Market Street. Every business is closed. The largest hotel is closed. No one's going there. There's nothing to go there for. But surrounding it, but on the mountain, not the mountain, but the hill, you have people who've got security. Therefore, the poor people who are out to steal, they're not going to go up there because they can get themselves hurt. But for everyone else, no, it's open day. By the way, I mentioned that it was a former resident, Jennifer Say. We're going to play her clip tomorrow. It's a longer clip. I just want to play a short clip right now. In any case, what have they got for $2 billion? They have nothing. They've only multiplied the problem because they have layer upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of worthless, useless parasites. The woke administrators, the equity administrators. Okay, let me quickly give you what I would do to help with San Francisco and any other major city that has a homeless problem like this. First, I would go to the state and federal government saying, about an hour or so out of San Francisco, we would like to have land donated to us by the federal government. And then we would like to have the government come in and build us quality housing for families, couples, individuals. We'd also like to have one section by itself for those who have mental illness, getting proper mental health care, and another for drug addiction or other addictions to help detoxify them. But these could be on a gigantic campus where you have quality of life. You're in nature, you have therapists there. So those who don't do drugs, who are not mentally ill, who are just simply poor because of life circumstances, you should have counselors. You should have people helping them get back on their feet and over a period of time reenter society. And you should also have employment people who will try to find places where these people can go and work. In the interim, you could have each different division could have its own healthy cafeteria where from morning till night, people go in and get healthy food, where they can get health counseling, physical counseling. They can be helped with whatever condition they're showing, but they're doing so not laying on a street, not sticking needles in their arm, not dying, not defecating, but rather being treated as if they've got a serious condition and you, and this is where they can get help. Now, that wouldn't cost a lot of money, because the state, the federal government could all contribute, foundations could contribute, and you could probably hold upwards of about 15,000 people at one time. So that's how you deal with it. But of course, none of that will be done because they're all virtue shaming. How can I deal with something? And then you just add 10 more people to a problem of trying to figure it out. And these people haven't figured anything out. And that's not just San Francisco, that's New York. Where does Mayor Adams think he's going to put people when he's taken up all the gyms, all the soccer fields, and Randall's Island with 3,000 people? And how do you think those 3,000 people are coming from different cultures, different backgrounds? Many are gangs. How do you think they're going to work out all together? You've got to cut what happens in the wintertime. How they're going to get from point A to point B. Where are the jobs for them? And yet, now that's spilling over. Oh, and I saw it when I was there walking around mid-Manhattan. There are places you don't see that, and then there are places where it's just overwhelming. Now you're going to see that everywhere over the next 2 years, because I predict that New York City alone will get upwards of 200,000 to 300,000 additional immigrants going in there. It's not fair to the ones coming legitimately, and it's not fair to the citizens, but nothing that is meaningful will be done. So you've got them a place to stay. Okay. And you've taken over all the old abandoned hotels. All right. And what do you expect is going to happen with people that you don't have jobs, you don't have a future? They're not thinking about that. They should be. Okay. Everything that can be done wrong is being done wrong in every of these cities in the United States and by our government. But there are solutions. It's just that you have to have a different mindset in order to have that solution. This was all political. And now, look at what's happening. Oh, and now, finally, those very liberal Upper West Side people that I've lived with my entire life, or my entire time in New York City since June 5th, 1965, now they're suddenly, well, I don't want these people outside of my house. I don't want these people doing drugs in front of my kids. I don't want to have to dodge, you know, screaming people with hammers or knives. Oh, but you didn't mind before? You just don't want them. Is that kind of a new chapter in the book of liberal beliefs? I'm for the poor as long as they're not in my rich neighborhood, in front of my very wealthy building. I see. Okay, well, let's not have that discussion. Too many people would have to have a tranquilizer afterwards. Let's go over and say hello now to Richard Gale. Richard was going to be on yesterday, but there were some technical difficulties. He's here today. Nice to have you back with us, Richard.
Hi, Gary.
Richard, here is the issue. There's a massive propaganda campaign going on that tells people, if we say something is disinformation, don't go any further. Simply stop reading that person, watching that person, and we're going to see that all the platforms they would be on, whether it's Wikipedia or Facebook, Google, whatever, is going to be eliminated. We're the authorities. And if you're a doctor, one of the 52 doctors that are now anonymous and who had some concerns about COVID, and therefore you gave your opinion and we think your opinion, all 52 are disinformation people, no matter what your background and scholarship. We're not going to debate. We're not going to give you a form to address this issue. We're just going to condemn you. The trial's over. USA Today held the trial. But the verdict was given for the last 3 years. Everybody agrees with Anthony Fauci, or you're anti-science, and you're a disinformation agent. So you decide to look into who's behind this. Something New York Times, USA Today, Wall Street Journal. I haven't seen them doing this. If they did, maybe I'm not just aware of it, and someone could send me the articles showing that they looked at how much disinformation is coming from the so-called disinformation experts. The forum is yours.
Yeah, so I think something maybe people should realize, and this is something that has really emerged, I would say, after September 9/11, is that we all recognize that there are these policy think tanks, and this is the kind of the propaganda that we receive. However, behind all that is a very large network of organizations, and they are generally nonprofit organizations, so that these are not profit, and that way the funding can come into them through all kinds of various channels. doesn't necessarily have to be it's coming directly from Bill Gates or not, but if it could come in from some other foundation, another group that is receiving the money from Bill Gates or from the U.S. intelligence agencies and the British intelligence agencies. And one of the most nefarious ones right now, especially throughout the COVID during the pandemic, is the Center for the Countering of Digital Hate. We've heard them. If you follow, like when Jen Psaki was Biden's press person, she would be frequently reporting, mentioning the Center for Digital Hate. I'm just going to call them for simplicity, CCDH, Center for Countering Digital Hate. And this is a go-to nonprofit organization that just generates propaganda and to counter all misinformation. It was only started in 2018. These two people that happen to have very deep ties to the government and thereby also intelligence agencies through association. They're very much part of what Kit Clarenberg from the Gray Zone called the censorship industrial complex. And so this is where we originally heard that there were the disinformation dozen, some people may recall, of these 12 individuals that included Bobby Kennedy, Dr. McCullough, Sayergy, who else was in that, Christian Northrup, Rashid Buttar, who unfortunately passed away. So these were the dirty dozen, you could say, that they were going after. This organization is of AstroTurf front or operation that directly interferes with civil rights on the behest of certain powers in the government, and particularly the Democrat Party. They receive all kinds of monies to conduct their investigations, including the British government, the Soros Open Society, Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, which has very close ties to the CIA. Many of its funders are directly connected with the BBC, which, as we know, is a government. They pretend that they are independent, but they receive their funding through British tax dollars. There's approximately 10 charitable organizations that are directly connected with the funding of this kind of neoliberal globalist agenda. To kind of frame the health projects for groups like the World Health Organization and whatnot. Their primary president, the president is this Imran Ahmed, who has no medical background, nothing in terms of medicine. He worked with Merrill Lynch. He was an operative within the British government for a while. He wrote a book called The New Serfdom, The Triumph of Conservative Ideas. And he just kind of magically just appeared during the pandemic as this kind of vaccine disinformation expert. But as I said, lacking any experience whatsoever in medicine. So immediately after the vaccines were rolled, Ahmed, he wrote, I'm quoting him here, I would go beyond calling anti-vaxxers conspiracy theorists to say they are an extremist group that pose a national security risk. So this is this kind of rhetoric that we are hearing is coming from this organization, and then that in turn is being fed to all the news agencies and the networks, magazines and newspapers. We just take a moment just to look at who's on the board of this organization. Okay. This organization. So we find that the World Wildlife Fund, which is actually a project of the British Crown, meaning, King Charles, to push the green globalist agenda with connected with the World Health Economic Forum. So they're a major player in this. They partner with the Burrough-Cadbury Trust, who sits on their board. And their sole mission, stated on their website, is simply to influence public opinion. There's Simon Clark. He's a member of the Atlantic Council. He happens to be Biden's national heads up Biden's National Council for Countering Domestic Terrorism, which is another misinformation smear mill. There's this woman, Christy McNeil, who's the director of Save the Children, but she received tens of millions of dollars from Gates, and particularly from Gates' partners with the Gavi organization you may know of, which is the kind of to spread the vaccine paradigm throughout the world. And with the World Health Organization, there's a woman, Eileen Kressian, who is one of the largest Hollywood agent moguls. She's the person that kind of brings in celebrities, movie stars, rock, music, you know, celebrities, to endorse them, get them, pay them huge sums of money to endorse them for all these different kinds of great reset agenda platforms, including, you know, to get vaccinated. There's another board member, this Lord Johnny Oates, O-O-A-T-S, who is the former head of the staff for the Prime Minister of England, and then he became the head of the global affairs for Facebook. And so, as we know, you know, more so even until Elon took over Twitter. But Facebook Zuckerberg was really on board with a lot of the cancellation and banning of people from Facebook. There's also this curious, weird creature, Damian Collins. He's kind of like a middleman who is a member. He's a member of the British Parliament, but he was on the chair of this committee that accused of Britain's role for Britain's role in this mass censorship campaign during the pandemic, that he was kind of like the kingpin of this. And I would just also say to all these people that I just mentioned, they're just kind of obsessive also over Russia a lot of this kind of anything that comes out where if it goes against the official narrative of the World Health Organization or out of the health agencies, we blame Russia. You know, this is Russian misinformation. So we hear that repeatedly. But this is also a lot of this originates, the kind of construction of this narrative comes from this Center for Countering Digital Hate. The good news is that, Elon Musk has filed a huge lawsuit against this organization. And just earlier this month, Representative Jim Jordan from Ohio is trying to bring them, subpoena them to a House Judiciary Committee, which he's the chair of, especially the CEO, the Imran Ahmed, and has been requesting all their documents and information related to for helping the committee's oversight and how and to what extent the Biden administration has been coercing and colluding with companies and other intermediaries to censor American speech. So, and this also includes bringing up what Jordan's really interested in has been the demonization and the political effects of their censoring people like Bobby Kennedy and Mercola and others that are on the disinformation double. So, that's pretty much the profile here.
Well, once again, we do our homework. We take people to behind the scenes to show them who's actually calling the shots. So I would hope that USA Today, its management, and if it has an omnibuson or someone that oversees the editorial integrity, that they question the article that was written and ask for either retraction or correction. Thank you very much, Richard Gale.
Okay, care.
And for BAI's listeners, we're out of time. But we're going to continue to top the hour on PRN.live. And you'll have a chance to call in and share your points of view. Boy, got brand new information, powerful information. I'm saving it for tomorrow. Just came in about an hour ago. But I do have a couple specials for you. Real quick, what do you do when a disaster strikes? I'm going to do a whole hour tomorrow and a fundraiser for BAI on this very topic at noon. However, there are things you should be thinking about doing now. Also, how in the world do you get off the grid? How do you break free of all these people's different control mechanisms, propaganda mechanisms over you? If you don't get off the grid, then you're under their control. Where do you go? How do you get there? What are the best places to go to? I did two webinars on these subjects. I've combined them into one package. Normally, you'd be paying at least $60. Today only, and this is only for 24 hours, $19.95, and you get both what to do when disaster strikes. This could save your life, literally save your life, and as well as how to get off the grid. It's a lot of time, a lot of hours, lots of information. And so how do you get this? Simple. Mind you, you're getting two webinars for the less than the price of one. It's only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and you get two of the most important webinars for this time. Call 877-627-5065. Or you can go on my site, garynall.com, and go to a page on supplements, and you can get it. Two webinars for the price of less than one. And this is stuff that's timely, couldn't be more timely based upon what's happening around the world, and especially with Maui. And I'm going to deal with Maui tomorrow, because I believe people should go to jail for what they did that prevented lives from being saved. And another special I have for you, I'm sure you've all seen, there's an ad on Fox and some other places where you're taking green vegetables, capsules, three of them, and taking red vegetable capsules, and it's a good product. You know, fine, take it, not a problem. The problem is when I saw in one of their ads about a year ago that they were saying, you know, not everyone can eat the full meal, and so if you can't, then take this. And so we did an analysis of their product and sent them the results, and we couldn't find that there was even one serving. In fact, all over the world, if you're going to get a product, and fine, do so. There are certainly health benefits to it. I don't discourage people from using it. But then I decided to do something different than it's ever been done before. I decided you can get your fruits and vegetables from a product if you know nutritional biochemistry and how to do it. So I created a product, and the product is called Fruit and Veggie Stuff. It's a new product. And with it, you're getting my Healing Foods Cookbook, the vegan cookbook with all the beautiful recipes and all the information. And you're getting the two together. And it would regularly cost you $132. It's only $79. You're getting a 40% discount. But here's what's good. We guarantee in each of our servings, each, you're getting three, I repeat, three servings of fruits and vegetables. Now, I'm not giving my proprietary knowledge away. Let them try to figure that out. But you're getting mangoes and black currants and cantaloupe and watermelon, papaya and plums and green peas, zucchini and tomatoes and watercress and squash and pea fiber and blackberries. It's how I do it. But you're getting three servings. So let's just say you take a serving in the morning, as I did this morning with my other things before I went out to work out. And then you take a serving in the evening. You're getting six. Let me repeat this. You're getting six servings of fruits and vegetables in one day. What does the USDA recommend? 5.5. Three to 5.5. So if you did it twice a day, you're getting more than what the actual government says you should have. Now, mind you, that does not mean you shouldn't be eating healthy. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't, and you should skip on something. No, it means that for the first time, and doubt me, go into any health food store in America, pick up any green product, and they're probably all good. I'm not saying don't buy them. I'm just saying, how many servings of fruits and vegetables are you getting from them? My guess would be less than one. And so this way you're getting that you're starting off at 100% with two servings, then you add in all the other healthy fruits and vegetables you want in a day. And now you're getting that. Plus, each serving gives you 8 grams of fiber. And it gives you 430 milligrams of potassium. Whoa, that's really important, and that's very good for you. Plus, you're getting the Healing Food Cookbook. Plus, I have a whole section of recipes to heal and prevent diabetes, Alzheimer's, cancer, more in there. Beautiful photographs. All right? Here's what Dave Boulay, America's greatest chef, in my opinion, had to say, quote, "Feeding people is what I do. This book is an owner's manual to a higher performing life. Use it part-time or full-time, but let nothing deter you from making food choices that will lead you to a powerful, more fruitful life." Okay, 150 original vegan recipes with photographs. So now you can do outstanding cooking, and now you have the backup to know each day. And who doesn't want it? Look, if I had a choice of getting my vitamin C, what my body actually needs, in the morning and the afternoon, I'm going to do it, all right? Because what if I'm busy? What if I'm working? What if I'm lecturing? What if I'm filming and traveling? I can't go into my kitchen and create a gourmet vegan meal. But this way, you've got a plan B, all right? Again, you're getting a big savings. You're getting the best of the best. Everyone's body benefits from more fruits and vegetables. And here you're getting 3 servings in each serving, or each time you take it. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And then you can combine this with anything else you have. Remember, I created green stuff, red stuff, cruciferous stuff, because of what each of those nutrients does in the body, not because you're getting your full servings of fruits and vegetables. That was not the purpose. It's understanding the unique synergistic blends and what they do for their polyphenol, their ORAC factors. All right? So you can see I still use all those all the time. But I make sure I get my fruit and veggie stuff every morning. And we just selected about 97 original recipes and sent them down to our chef who works in four of the best restaurants in the United States. These are all Michelin-rated restaurants. And so he's a top chef, and he's our vegan chef. And now he's got the photograph and the recipe, and it's different every single meal, every single day. So that's coming up at the retreat. Call 877-627-5065. Right now, the retreat is filled. If anyone's not coming who signed up for any reason, then please let Luann know today, because we have people who want to come, but there's no room for them. All right? And when there is, we'll let you know. All right? And Luann's number is 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.